Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
This podcast is brought to you by Native Grape Odyssey. Native Grape Odyssey is an educational project financed by the European Union to promote European wine in Canada, Japan, and Russia. Enjoy. It's from Europe.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast. My name is Monty Walden. My guest today is Michele Scienza, who is owner or co-owner of the...
Guado al Melo.
Guado al Melo. It's an easy thing to say, but I always get that wrong, in the Bulgari region on the Tuscan coast. What is a Guado and what is a Melo?
Guado al Melo is the name of the place, so the old name of this place. Guado is fort.
A fort?
Yeah. And at the apple tree, maybe because many years ago there was cultivated some apple tree in the area. The property is around the property we have a small river, and in small area of this river we have this fort. So the name of this place is Guado al Melo.
So it's like Guado is like a lookout post, isn't it? So the idea is that this area of the Tuscan coast was invaded by the Spanish in the Middle Ages.
So. Yes, absolutely. Guado is a common name here because normally we have the rain concentrated in winter and in spring. So in summertime, normally the river are without water and you can cross normally the river. This is the reason because we have many Guado, because you can cross this river in summertime by the horses or...
Okay, so it's a ford or if you're a
ford.
I got that. I thought it was a lookout town. Yeah. A guado. Like a guardare.
Guardare, yes.
Oh, okay.
The word is guardare.
Okay, yes. So it's a crossing point.
Without a bridge.
Without a bridge, yeah. And so when the stream is low, the animals can cross.
Yeah.
Wild ones,
yes,
are also keen.
Yes.
Okay.
And normally you can go when you
with
are
your horse.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Where is your family from originally in Italy?
My family come from Trentino Alto Adige.
Okay.
North of Italy, west part of Italy. We reach this area, Bulgari, in almost 20 years ago, because in 1998, the year before my grandparents' death, and they owned our estate in south of Trentino, because my family in Trentino is grape and wine producer since three generations. But at that time, my grandparents died in 1988, and me and my father, we decided to leave the estate because the estate was small. Our relationship, me, my uncle, and my father with his brother were not so
easy.
Yes. So we decided to leave, and we decided to enter Bulgaria because my father did many study about Bulgari terroir.
So briefly, just who is your dad?
My father is Attilio Scienza, and he's a viticulture professor in University of Milan. And in 1993, he gave the to study.
He was given the job of studying the Bulgari terroir.
Yeah, from the Bulgari Consortio and from the region Tuscany. And
so that was in 1993 or four.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was
the study from. The study from was from 1994, the first vintage, 1995, and it was finished in 1996.
So this was when Bulgari changed the disciplinary. There was a change, wasn't there? Wasn't it when it became the DOC?
Bulgari has three age. The first was before 1983. Because before that time, Bulgari was vino da tavola, only vino da tavola.
It's officially a vino di tavola.
Yes, absolutely. And it was funny because in 1974, the blind tasting in London was funny because Sassicaia, table wine from
vino
Italy,
da tavola.
Yes, was the best. So it was. So in 1983, the Bulgari became DOC, but only for the white and for the rosé, because Antinori made one of the most famous rosé in Italy called Scalabrone in Bulgari area. The DOC for the RAD come only in 1996. And come because of this study made by my father. Because the study were made to understand the different soils in Bulgaria in combination with the five mainly cultivated at that time red grapes.
Most of those were Bordeaux grapes, weren't they?
Yes, but not only, because Bulgaria is in Tuscany, and before the French grapes, Bulgaria was Sangiovese area, was Canaiolo, was Malvasia and Colorino. So in the DOC, we have the possibility to make a wine with Sangiovese less than 50%, no more than 50%, sorry. But we can do if you want. So the study was made on the five mainly cultivated grapes in the different soils. Just to understand in three vintages, different vintages, how was the best combination and how was the best grape or the best combination of grapes. And the study finished in 1999 when the DOC organization released the Manuale di Uso del Territorio, means a great book.
Guidebook for the region.
Yeah. Yes, in this book you have all the information about, you come from, I don't know, from Australia and you would like to plant a vineyard in Bulgaria. So you take this big book and you analyze the piece of land that you brought, so you can understand from this book which kind of grape plants,
which rootstock to choose.
Absolutely. How do you manage the canopy? How do you grow your grape without grass in the field? Or
so that's pretty unique in Italy, isn't it? It's actually a wine region basically says, listen, if you want to come, and more people probably will come because of this famous decanter tasting. I think it was in 78, success of Sassica. Like, if you're going to do that, these are the soils, and this is probably a good suggestion. Is this rootstock if you want to do it this way? I mean, that's pretty unheard of, isn't it? That kind of organization and that planning in order that people that do come don't make expensive mistakes and then make maybe not great wine and diminish the reputation of Bulgaria. I mean, that has to be unique in Italy.
In France is quite common, but absolutely not in Italy. But you know, Bulgaria is a small area. The people that founded the first group were a producer with a big knowledge, so they decided to have and to collect many information to improve the work and also to help the people to make not too many mistakes.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. This experience is very good for the red, actually. We don't have many experience about white.
In the region, in Bulgaria as a whole, you mean?
Also in Bulgaria, particularly. Because, you know, outside Tuscany, the people think that Tuscany is a great region for the red wines, but not for the white. Sometimes the problem is the grape. If you want to make a great wine here with the Trebbiano, probably you
even on the best oil in the world, you'll struggle to make
If you want to make it, it's not the problem. The problem is not related with the Trebbiano, because Lugana. Yeah. You can make great wines with Trebbiano, or also in Abruzzo you can make great white Trebbiano, but you need weather and soil condition totally different. We have sandy and very light soils
here in this estate.
Yes. Also in Bulgaria. Normally we don't have a lot of clay.
So in your vineyard you didn't do the classic thing of planting, as far as I know, 10 rows of Cabernet Sauvignon, 10 rows of Merlot, 10 rows of Cabernet Franc. Explain to us how you and your father have planted your vineyards, because it's a very unique way of thinking.
We normally, our strategy is when we plant a new vineyard, we decide the manly grape or the two manly grape or the three manly grapes, but we dedicate part of this vineyard to plant such strange grapes, not so common grapes.
When you say strange, you mean foreign grapes? Unknown almost grapes?
Yeah. Or not planted or not common for the Bulgari area or for Italy also. The idea behind the reason are two mainly. The first one is that the weather could change.
Climate change.
Absolutely. You need to be prepared. So the only way is to plant different grapes and to vinify separately. We make every year almost 50 different vinification, but small. I mean, we vinify less than 50 kilos of grapes every year. We make this small vinification just to understand how this grape
reacted.
Absolutely. For many different vintages, because one vintage or two vintages, sometimes they are not so enough to understand how a grape can grow or which kind of wine is produced. And the second reason is also the people could change the taste. When I study at university and before in the San Michele Trentino, the taste was absolutely different from now.
So cool fermented estuary whites, primary fruit.
White, absolutely white, like paper, very technology.
Yeah, see-through wines.
Technological white and woody reds. Absolutely
blasted with oak.
Absolutely concentrated and big muscle. So this was the taste. The taste now is going to another direction completely. But if you have 20 hectares with two grapes or one grapes, this could be a problem, because you cannot change your viticulture or your enology or your wines
immediately.
Absolutely not.
So tell us a little bit about some of the wines that you make. Let's start with the whites first. Do you make just single varietal wines? Like, do you make a single varietal Chardonnay?
We have Vermentino 100%, because Vermentino is very common. Is local. Is a good grape.
What are its characteristics?
First of all, is a table grape, and this explains 100% of the characteristic of this grape and this wine. Means that you have low acidity, but also not high sugar. You can make enjoyable, drinkable, fruity, and
soft and fruity.
Yeah, absolutely. Drinkable wines, but you cannot make a great white.
A really complex one.
Absolutely not. So this is the reason, because I was born in our state, another white, more complex, more powerful.
What's it called?
Able to age.
What's it called?
It's called Criseo. Criseo means from the Greek word Criseos, made by gold. And the idea behind is plant in a vineyard, in a single vineyard, small vineyard, different kind of grapes.
So a mix of varieties.
Yeah, it's a field blend.
So roughly how many different varieties have you got in there?
Five different.
Okay.
Vermentino, Fiano, Incrocio Manzoni, Verdicchio and Petit Mansin. Why with Vermentino these other four grapes? Because all these four grapes are able to age, and they have great acidity, great structure. The Fiano you can drink after 20 years and they are
no
amazing,
problem.
Absolutely. And the Verdicchio, why not? In Incrocio Manzoni, in the blue as the Riesling, so you can imagine. And the Petit Mansin is an amazing grapes, because when he's ready to pick, you can have 26, 27 bricks, means 17 degrees alcohol.
Potentially,
But 10 acidity, gram per liter.
It's got high malic malic acid level, hasn't it? That's the secret of the two enzymes.
And also 2.98 pH. Mm-hmm. Because the acidity is important for the taste. You cannot feel the pH, but for the technology of the fermentation, the pH is absolutely important. Because if you have a low pH, you have great fermentation, and also the aging process is absolutely amazing and very long, and is more easy
in terms of spoilage. So low, that just the pH, having the pH like that means the wine has a high acid strength, and that you know helps preserve.
Yeah. But if you want to have an enjoyable sensation from this kind of wine, so with this kind of acidity, the only way is to age on the yeast for such a long time. So we, after fermentation, we leave for 1 year the wine on the yeast, and we stir a couple of time every week.
So that gives you a great combination of a wine that has that freshness from that acidity that you're talking about, and then that creamy, almost sort of creamy flavors that you, or textures that you get from the lees aging and lees stirring. So you have a lovely combination.
Yeah, because during the yeast that stay in the wine with this alcohol and this acidity, they after fermentation, they broken. And this means that they have a wool around.
You mean the yeast?
Yes, okay. The yeast, this wool. And this wool is made by big sugar. So after staying with this acidity and this alcohol in the wine, this wool broken. And you have in the wine is sugar, big sugar. This sugar in your mouth means creamy and sweetness. Not sweet like sugar, yeah. Properly.
It's a sweet thing. It seems like sweetness, but it's not actually sugar. It's like a creaminess or... Yeah, so it's not like your sugar level goes up when the yeast...
Absolutely not.
It's just...
And you have also, important effect on the technology, because these polysaccharides help you to stabilize the wine from the
tartaric precipitates. Yeah.
So I don't need to make a stabilization. I don't need to add nothing chemical from outside. It's very natural.
But you think, just talking about natural, what everything...
I need time. The only problem is if you have want to have this process, you need time. You need 1 year in tank. So time means sometimes money.
what's interesting about what you're saying is you and your father, your father's probably the most famous wine, well, he is the most famous wine scientist in Italy, and obviously he's part of the winery as well. I don't want to be too rude about natural wine, but everything that you've explained to me in terms of you have a slightly unconventional vineyard because you've mixed great varieties. You pick it, I guess, normally and ferment it fairly normally. But what you're saying is with patience, with healthy grapes that are in balance, that are picked well,
yes,
and not hurt at all, nice fermentation, all the rest of it, with a bit of science behind it, you can actually make a wine with really little or no intervention.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah? Absolutely.
And which is clean, which is clean.
Yeah. But the science and the knowledge, if you use well, they help you to make a very sustainable wine in terms of production, but also in terms of...
additives.
Absolutely.
Like sulfites,
absolutely.
Or fining
agents.
Because
if you know what's happened...
At each step, and you know you're already a step ahead, you know what's going to happen. You say,
yeah.
Right, I know if I leave the wine like this for X weeks or months, I'll have to do this and have a little bit of pazienza. Okay, that was that wine. That was a great story. Let's talk about another wine. Go on.
We have also another wine, strange wine, like the Criseo. This is Giassarte.
Giassarte? So what does that mean?
This is a river.
Is this the Ford?
No.
Okay.
No, this is a river. Actually, it's in the south of Casale. Kazakhstan.
Oh, Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So
and
why is that important?
It's important because for Herodotus, for historical Herodotus, this river was the limit between Asia and Europe.
So it was like a frontier, wasn't it?
Between
cultures and...
Absolutely.
Way of eating and even weather.
Yeah.
So it was real... Okay.
Yeah.
So it was that boundary.
And also because many grapes come from Asia. We would like to call this wine Giassarte because of this history behind the viticulture and the enology and This is the reason because we call this wine Tassato.
So what's the blend?
30 grapes.
30?
Yeah, from a single vineyard.
And they're all planted together, complanted?
Yes, they are complanted. It means that we have 30 rows, and each row is another grapes.
Different grapes, yeah.
Yeah, different grapes. We don't vinify, we don't pick all the grapes at the same time, but we harvest normally in 7 different vintages.
7 different times.
Yeah. We make 7 different fermentation, co-fermentation, and then at the end, the wine is, the 7 wines, they are aged for a couple of years.
So then they're blended. You have 7 different lots, and then they're blended.
No.
They're kept apart. They age separately as well. Yeah. Okay, that's interesting.
The blend is only at the end of the aging process. We cannot harvest at the same time, simply because in the white you have only 2 dimensions, because you have the acidity and the sugar. But in the red, you have also the polyphenols.
So
they are very important as a component of the taste of the red wine. So you cannot harvest at the same time 2 different grapes, because otherwise I taste it like wine made harvested at the same times. Because if you go in Douro Valley, they make wines with 80, 90 different grapes from a single vineyard. The wine are absolutely amazing. The only problem is that they are not so fine, so elegant. So my idea was to separate and to harvest the grape when they are ready to make these 7 different wines, and then blend to have a wine more definito,
with more definition.
Yes.
What would you drink with that?
Pear, you mean? Well, it depends. It depends on the vintage. Okay. Because sometimes you can have just started very powerful. The last vintages, they are very concentrated.
Because of the climate?
Yes, absolutely. But what is fun is that you have great concentration, but the wine is still balanced because of the acidity. Because the different vintages, the different grapes have really different reaction to the weather, to the climate change.
So you're studying that as well, though, aren't you? That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
With your father.
Yeah.
So what I mean in terms of the effects, just to segue a little bit, in terms of the effects of climate change, I mean if I'm a wine grower, just say I want some money,
okay,
and I want to plant a vineyard somewhere warm, south of France, Spain, wherever, what would your advice to me be? Your tip?
Which kind of grapes you mean?
Yeah, maybe I'm going to plant just a normal, like some white wine varieties and some red wine.
Oh, you can plant white or red.
Yeah, but am I going to be planting...
Doesn't matter, it depends which kind of grapes. So.
Yeah, am I going to be planting Chardonnay and Merlot?
Normally, you must choose grapes normally that are later
ripening.
Yes, the Merlot was created, not but selected, because it's very early. Because you can normally is ready very early, and in the Bordeaux area, we are 1,200 kilometers in north of Bulgaria. So the weather is not Mediterranean. You need grapes that is ready when the weather is still good. Otherwise, you can have problem with health, and the grape maybe is not so good to harvest. So the Merlot is perfect for Bordeaux. We don't have too much Merlot in my estate. I because Bulgaria is maybe it's too hot for Merlot. It depends. The only area in Bulgaria where the Merlot is very good is in Masseto, but they have very unique combination of soil. The soil is very clay. It's like Petrus. So they can make a great Merlot. The other area, probably they are not so great for Merlot. And the Chardonnay is the same problem. So is a grape from Burgundy.
But are your fellow growers in Bulgaria, obviously you're a famous family on the scientific academic side for sure. And obviously you've got your vineyard, which is also, it's very beautiful. It's very biodiverse when you walk around. You're not looking at rows and rows of vines. You're looking at trees.
Like a garden.
Yeah,
like
right. Trees and lavender plants all over the place. Do they think you're a little bit crazy, or do they realize that obviously you're very scientific? I mean, we're coming from a famous science-based wine family. Are they curious? Do they say, you know, I want to copy what you're doing with your lavender, and do they do that, or do they just not have a lot of contact?
No, we have contact, absolutely.
But I don't think you're like the crazy scientists you know, the
No, we have contact. We have many contacts. We have. We are also very open. If we have people, producer in the area, we have had producer from the area that came in the past when they decided to make, for example, white. They came and they tasted the different grapes from the vineyard, and they tasted the different small vinification just to understand which was the best combination. And not only the best grape, but the best combination of white grapes to have very good white wine. Yes, absolutely. What is very unique is the combination between, is the concept of the terroir. You cannot copy. Is the unique combination between one weather, one soil, one maker, the grape or the combination of grapes. This is unique. Mm. The wine made by Scienza family is unique. I'm not worried about imitation or because...
They're hard to imitate, isn't it?
Yeah, because this is... you remember in the past in Florence, Leonardo teach to many different students how... I'm not Leonardo. Be careful. But just to understand...
Yeah, this is what I do. If you want to take some lessons.
Because... You have a grape, you taste the grape, and your taste, the taste of the winemaker is unique. You taste the wine during the fermentation or during the vinification. Normally, this is your taste, and you take the decision with your brain, with your taste, so it's unique.
Okay, so let's talk about the reds.
The Sarte, okay. We have other three reds.
Okay, let's do them one by one.
The more easy wine produced by Guadalmelo is called Bacco in Toscana. This wine is dedicated to a poem write by Francesco Redi called Bacco in Toscana. Francesco Redi is a funny man because he was a scientist but also an artist.
Michelangelo was the same, yeah? Scientist and artist. Yeah.
At that time was normally. Yes. Now we are only one thing. We drink one grape, grape. Yeah. we have one. Yeah. But the people can do many things and they can taste many things. And then the Bacco in Toscana is this poem. And in this poem, Francesco Redi imagined that Bacco is Bacchus, the god of the grape, traveling around Tuscany and tasting different wines, different grapes. And on the label, you find the word Bumba Baba, because Bumba Baba was danced in Florence in the middle of 17th century.
When Redi was writing, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
He was writing in 1742.
So the next one?
And then we have the Rute.
How do you spell that, Rute?
Rute is R-U-T-E.
R-U-T-E. And what's the blend?
The name before.
Yeah.
Because the name is the red, the color, for the Etruscan population.
So it's an Etruscan word.
Okay. It's an Etruscan word, yeah. And it's a blend of mainly Cabernet Sauvignon, 80% almost, and the rest is Merlot. Aged for 15 months in barrique. It depends on the vintage, it depends on the year, but more or less 15 months.
How long, when you, in a normal vintage, you make that wine, how long does it take to come round to be drinkable? Do you need to wait 20 years, or is
No, I want to tell a nice story, because more than 20 years ago, when I came to Bulgaria, I did my first vintage as practical in Kamarkanda, Gaia state,
which is Bulgaria.
My experience before was in Trentino, was in Piemonte, and at the end of 20 days in Kamarkanda state, we have had the first vinatura.
When you take the grape skins out of the red grape skins out of the tank and just collect the wine and press the skins.
Yeah, and then we tasted the wine. For me was strange, because after Nebbiolo, Gaglioppo, Aglianico, you can imagine a wine from Bulgaria that was after fermentation, drinkable, enjoyable, smooth tannins was absolutely outstanding, impossible. The question is, yes, the wine is drinkable just after fermentation, but the aging is possible because the aging process is not related only with polyphenols, but is related with the balance of the acidity. If you think that some whites can age for many years without polyphenols, also red without big polyphenols can age for many years. Bulgari has a great balance in the acidity because of the soil, because of the weather, because this difference between night and day temperature, we preserve a lot of the acidity, and this acidity, good acidity and low pH, allow us to have wine that can age for many years without being undrinkable when they are young.
Where does the cold air come from?
From sea.
Okay.
And because we are 3 kilometers from the sea.
Mm-hmm. And the mountains?
The mountains are very close too, but the sea is the region for this wind
for the cool.
It's cool, yeah.
So basically in the evening you get cool air coming in from the sea, and it sits in Bulgari, and then obviously during the day it gets burnt off, and then again the next night.
Yes.
The cold air rolls in.
Consider that we have 30. Normally also the day temperature is not so high. If you have in Montalcino 35, 37, we have 33 during the day. But during the night we have 15, 16. So
what effect does that have on the chemistry of either white wine grapes or red wine grapes in terms of aromas and tannins?
You have a very progressive and very slow accumulation of polyphenols, and you lose not too much acidity. You don't lose a lot of flavor. So you have, even you are in the Mediterranean weather, you have fresh potential, fresh wines, not
fresh tasting wines.
Yes.
Yeah, crisp tasting
then,
wines.
Then you can wait longer and you can harvest more, and then you have powerful wines. You can do what you want.
You're more. It's a climate that gives you a microclimate. That gives you flexibility.
Yes, absolutely. Then you can decide on what you want to do. But you have this possibility, and this is unique, because if you go to Suvereto, is maybe 25 minutes from here in South, they don't have the same, because they don't have the influence from the sea.
Because they've got a row of hills, haven't they?
Yeah.
That sort of blocks that sea air a little bit.
Also, the soil are very powerful with a lot of clay. So normally the wine, they are more powerful, more concentrated, more tannic, and they need a lot of time to age.
So you're saying that, is that one of the reasons why Bulgari has been so successful, that you can make these wines big in terms of, I don't want to say structure, but in terms of mouthfeel, shall we say, but they're not raspingly tannic, they're actually very smooth when they're
because
younger.
Because in our culture in Italy, normally we use wine during eating. So normally the tannins combine with the protein in the food and you don't feel nothing. Or maybe it's also enjoyable, it's nice. Mm-hmm. Because the wine help you to eat.
To digest.
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, we produce wine also to export. And we go and we explain our wine to other culture. And in other culture, also they drink wine outside, lunch or the dinner. So at that time, you need to drink wine not so tannic or acid. Otherwise, the sensation could be not so nice. So this is the reason I think that Bulgari,
the success for
the Bulgari. Also because behind Bulgari there are great family producers, and the Antinori and the Sassicaia and Ornellaia. So those people invest many money and they have
in promoting the region.
Yeah, and they also have many
a lot of knowledge.
This is the reason behind successful wine. You need also the quality, and maybe the quality of this wine is related with this kind of also because, you know, the Sangiovese was a common grape before 1950 here. The idea was maybe the Sangiovese is common, but we need something different, because we need that the people speak about Bulgari. And also the Sangiovese is a difficult grape. It's a great grape, but the problem is that it's very Italian, so great combination of acidity and tannins, and it's not so easy to understand a wine with this kind of combination. The success of Super Tuscans were a blend of Sangiovese and Merlot, because Merlot is more smooth, the acidity is low, so the Sangiovese with Merlot is more enjoyable, or Cab, or you can put Syrah or what you want. So this is the idea. And also the aging process, because the idea behind the Super Tuscan were the use of small wood. The small wood,
oak barrels,
yes, increased the rating of the polymerization process. The polymerization process of the tannins means...
What does that mean?
Means that when the tannins are very small, they are very aggressive. If you drink a red wine, young red wine, the sensation in your mouth is...
Yeah, it makes your mouth feel dry.
This is because the tannin, small tannins in the red wine, combine with the protein in your mouth, and the sensation is...
Drying.
Yes, because the protein make the lubrication of your tongue.
So your tongue, yeah.
Yeah. The polymerization process make these small tannins aggressive, mm-hmm. bigger, because they link together with the help of oxygen. And when the tannin are big, they are sweet.
Smoother.
Yeah, they are not so aggressive. So the small barrel...
Small barrel aging helps.
Yes. Yeah. Help to have a lot of oxygen from outside to the wine, and you increase the ratio of the polymerization. So at the end, a Sangiovese, acid and tannic, after a couple of years in barrique, is smooth, is very drinkable. And this is the idea behind the Super Tuscan also.
Yeah.
And the aging also.
Yeah. The idea that these tannins are like single parts of a chain,
yeah.
and then they all get joined up and it's smoother
yeah,
to
because
the touch.
The idea is, because if you want to introduce your grapes and your wines, I mean, from Italy, that come from another kind of culture and another kind of views. In different culture, the wine must be a little bit changed. You cannot make the same wine with the same characteristic as in Italy, and you put absolutely to, I don't know, China or England or US, because the people, they are not prepared to understand this kind of, taste.
Do you think tastes are changing there? I mean, obviously, there has been an era, some of those wines, not yours, but were quite sort of a little bit too oaky and big, and now everything seems to be calming down, that the sort of Super Tuscan,
absolutely.
Much easier drinking, less sort of trophy wines.
Absolutely, because the people that started to drink maybe 20 years ago, they are now they have more knowledge, because normally when you start to drink the wine, you start with the sweet sensation, so sweet wines, because the sweet is your first sensation when you born, because the milk from your mother is sweet. So when you start to drink the Moscato d'Asti, for example, or a great Passito or something like that. Then after, sometimes, I don't know how much, but it
when
depends.
You get a bit older,
yeah, you need other sensations. So you are prepared for more acidity, or maybe not tannins, but acidity. Then you need the tannins, and then, you know, and this is the process. So this is the process, and this is normal. Also, in Italy, around 1990, we produced this kind of wine with a lot of oak sensation, just because at that time we sell the wine to US, and the people in US at that time, they came from whiskey. So whiskey is without acidity,
bourbon.
Yeah, but with a lot of wood. So the idea was to produce a wine,
like a stepping stone,
powerful. Yeah. Now the people, after 20 years, they drink for these 20 years. Mm-hmm. So they need other tastes, maybe more soft, more elegant, more, you know.
But that's not the reason why you're doing your white wines that are made in this, quote, old-fashioned style with the vineyards that have been interplanted. You're doing that for other reasons as well. I mean, you're... the recent trend, I suppose, in natural wine, where you've got amphora wines and things like that.
No.
So you're doing it to look ahead, as you said earlier on, about climate change and the fact that we probably are going to have to change the grape varieties we have in our vineyards and the way that those wines are styled.
But, you know, what I need is a small producer like me. Normally, I do this kind of... I have this idea. So customers and the producer, they go in two streets. And the big producer, they drive on this street, and this street with the customer is very close to, because they don't have time to explain the difference between the normal taste, normal
inverted commas,
and his idea behind the wine that they produce.
Yeah, so you have to keep it simple.
Yeah, I have time, and this is my value to go to the people and to explain why I make this wine with this kind of taste or this kind of combination of acidity or tannins or what you want. So I'm not so close to the customer. I don't need to be very close to the customer taste, because I can explain.
Yeah, you can hand sell.
Yes, absolutely.
And you have a story to tell as well.
Yeah.
So we've got one more wine to talk about.
We have the Atis, absolutely. Atis is A-T-E-S.
A-T-E-S, yeah. And what's that made from?
His name is the name of a king. He was an Etruscan king. In fact, this is a nice history, because Atis was this king, because many years ago, the historical thing that thought that the Etruscan population come from Lydia, from Asia, from Turkey, and they came from that area to the Tyrrhenian coast. Now we know, not me, but the archaeological know that is a autochthon population.
It's a local population.
Yes. But the history is that maybe 4,000 years ago in Lydia, this region of Turkey, the situation was very bad. So they didn't have nothing to eat. So the king decided to divide the population in two groups and send one group to the Tyrrhenian coast. And the man who drive this group was called Tirreno. So this is the reason, because our sea is called Mare Tirreno.
The Tyrrhenian Sea.
Yes.
The left-hand side of Italy, just for anybody that doesn't know where it is.
And the father of Tirreno was Atis.
So. Okay. So what do you drink that with then, Atis?
You can pair many things. When he's young, you can pair with powerful food. Maremma is a strange place. Bulgaria is a strange place, because we are 5 kilometers from the sea, but we don't have culture about seafood. Because after the Etruscan population, the Etruscan population worked a lot to dry the area, because the area was very humid.
Very swampy.
Absolutely. So the Etruscan work a lot, and they absolutely dry the area, and many area around Bulgaria were cultivated, but more than 2,000 years ago. After that time, unfortunately, the soils became again humid. And only at the end of 18th century, Lorena family planted the pine very close to the sea and started to dry the soils.
Pine trees, yeah.
Yeah. In that area, close to the sea, there were not people that live. So we don't have sea.
Seafood culture.
Absolutely not. We eat wild boar. We eat a lot of things that come from the forest, land,
yeah.
You know. So you can pair Atis with wild boar, why not? And maybe it's more...
A better match.
Yes, absolutely. For the area, absolutely.
Okay, I'd like to say thanks to my guest, Michele Scienza, for telling us a little bit about a lot, in fact, about the history, and also the very interesting wines that he makes at Guardo Almelo. I love the idea of these sort of orangey white wines that are technically pristine, but they're very, very characterful. They're really, really stimulating wines. They're one of the most stimulating wines I think I've tried in quite a while, if I'm being honest. Really, really interesting. Texturally, also the colour as well, very brilliant colours.
Yeah.
Yeah, real eye-opener for me. Now, you say, right, Monty, you're going to go to two absolute nerdy scientists and you're going to try their wine. It's going to be cool fermented, estuary, you know, that kind of thing. Absolutely not that, not the case. And I also love the fact that everything you've done, and so your father as well, Attilio, who's obviously a well-known scientist, is grounded in the past. It's like, but not looking backwards nostalgically, but looking looking to the past for the good ideas that existed. I think it's so important that we remember where we've come from. We're going to a really dangerous place, I think, in terms of climate change and all the rest of it. We've got to be a little bit more cognizant of where we went wrong in the past and what we got right in the past. And your wines are a real example to me of taking the best of the past and the best of the modern and making wines of real character and really high quality. So well done to you, well done to your dad, and it's been absolutely fascinating talking to you. And great guy, got a great sense of humour, really
so
friendly, and hopefully we'll see each other again. We'll do another chat sometime. Yeah, really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Grazie.
Thanks a lot.
Grazie.
Super duper.
This podcast has been brought to you by Native Grape Odyssey, discovering the true essence of high quality wine from Europe. Find out more on nativegrapeodyssey.eu. Enjoy. It's from Europe.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.